Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Glenn, how you doing? Are you all right?
How's it going, Dave? Good morning.
Good morning to you too. It is 12 minutes past 10. We're talking to Glenn Hansard. 51552 is our text. Glenn, you've got the album out. Can I call this the second solo album?
That's exactly what it is.
That's exactly what it is. No matter how much you've done down through the years, no matter how much, like, there's been kind of non-frame stuff. I mean, you've been 9 or 10 years doing non-frame stuff, even though you're also doing the frames, right?
Yeah, there's definitely, I've been sort of jumping back and forth.
Jumping back and forth, and also Swell Season stuff from 06 and all the rest of it. So let's take a look at this new album then. Would it be fair to say that with a few cursory listens to it that I haven't really found what I might call love songs on the album?
Yeah, to be honest, Dave, I sort of limited myself on this one. I said no love songs. No, the word heart and the word love aren't allowed.
Hold on. Did you set off for this album saying, I'm not going to use the word heart or I'm not going to use the word love? And I certainly won't be saying Moon in June and Walking Talking.
Whenever I found myself singing the word heart or love, I replaced it with a word that you could imagine. And it actually really helped me to get away from them. But it's interesting to set limits for yourself when you're writing. And I sort of noticed that, you know, that there was a huge amount of sort of unrequited love songs in my past, and there isn't a huge amount of unrequited love in my past. And I was like, why am I writing about this so much?
Because everybody does.
I suppose, yeah, because everybody does, and that's it. And it's, you know what it is, it's easy, and it's wonderful, because when you get a love song right, that thing can live for 100 years, you know. It's like building a good bit of furniture. It's kind of like love songs are pleasing. And they're great, but I decided to try on this one to try do something else.
Okay, listen, you've been celebrating the Frames 25 years this year, so you've been making music for an awful long time with yourself, with lots of other people, and you really have played on the biggest stages with some of the biggest people all over the world. But the funny thing about it is that, like, sometimes a band spends 5 or 6 weeks doing an album, and then the album doesn't happen. No, we scrapped that and we started something new. There must be, with you, an awful lot of songs that you would have stored away somewhere, bits and pieces, odds and ends. Do you ever go back to them and sort of plug them in and say, you know, this would suit now, or if I added this to that, or changed that around there, or is it always something that you, like, for instance, with this album, that you approached it from a completely new perspective?
It's a good question, and I think what happens is you get haunted by an idea, because ideas come, you know, ideas are 10 a penny. I mean, people can come up with songs, as in, like, a thought for a song, or a bit of a rhythm, or a bit of a chord, or some melody that comes into your head. They come a lot. Finishing the song is the hardest thing in the world to do, because to finish the song, you've got to use the front of your brain. Whereas we're operating, I mean, I don't know if it's front or back brain, but we're operating from the part of the brain that's mostly just creative, and oftentimes we're just trusting that that's just going to finish the song. But actually, to finish the song, you do need to become that guy who puts on the coffee, gets up and kind of goes, right, what is this lyric? What does it mean? Do I mean it? How can I finish this song and make it work? And so in terms of old ideas that hang around, perhaps, you know, I've got some... Like, there was a song on my last record that I started writing when I was 18, and I only finished it on my last record. So, and the only reason that I went to that song and went to finish it is that the song was a persistent kind of a ghost. It just kept on showing up in the back of my head, and I'd be singing a melody sometimes to myself, and I go, where is that? I know that. What band is that? Or what musician is that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I realised it was mine, and I go, oh, gosh, you know, that thing has been actually knocking around my head for a long, long time. And then I'd figure, okay, well, how can I sing it and get into it and find the truth in it? And if I can, then I finish it. But other than that, these songs just go away. They sort of drift off and they disappear. And then maybe 5 years later, it might jump into your head again for a moment and then disappear again.
Okay, well, look, Rhythm and Repose is the one you were talking about there. The new one is called Didn't He Ramble, and that is the new album from Glenn Hansard. Would it be fair to say that there's a lot of self-reflection on this, maybe more than on some previous ones? And, like, you know, some heartening kind of stuff to friends as well. Friends here, friends not here.
Well, like I said about unrequited love, I kind of wanted to write this record, if at all possible, I wanted to sing more about what it's like to be a brother, to be a son, to be a friend, rather than just to be a boyfriend, because that's a very special and very special place. But I don't find myself in that place in my life, so I don't really want to sing about somewhere where I'm not where I am. I'm not, sorry, and so. So this record is really a lot. My dad is in it a lot. My mother's in it. My brothers, you know, I feel like for some reason, wherever I am, I'm 45, wherever I am in life, I find myself wanting to address stuff that's more in my my deeper past instead of my immediate environment.
Okay, well, there is a certain thing, where you've been making music long enough, right through the days of, well, I better just start saying CDs, but vinyl, CDs, yeah, downloading, yeah, streaming and all the rest. Do you think you're lucky in some ways that you have enough of a brand or a reputation or a past or whatever, with really big marks along the way, from everything from winning Oscars to Swell Season to all the rest, and playing with some of the biggest names around, that your album is out there and will be released out there and people can get it out there and can be like, for instance, they review it in America and they call it the sophomore album because this is your second one, and the amount of people that you know in Ireland who make great music who will never properly be heard because they can't get it out there in the way you can.
Yeah, Dave, and for a long time I was that guy too.
Yeah.
So absolutely, I absolutely understand, and what I would put it down to is just some kind of willpower on behalf of whoever's writing the song to just get their music heard, you know. And it really is, it comes down to, at the end of the day, I don't think anyone's in the business of going out there anymore and really searching for that artist that's not heard and putting them up. The A&R man is kind of gone.
Oh, yeah.
Nowadays, the songwriter is the A&R man. They are the agents. They are the manager. They are the record company. You know, if you're not all of these things, then none of these things will work for you. It's like the days of, you know, even I still meet friends now, you know, like Irish guys that moved to the States in the 90s or whatever. And at the time, I'd be thinking, Jesus, they really made a bold move, fair play to them. But they're still out there talking about no record label. They're still out there talking about, you know, oh, I can't get a label interested. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, right.
You know,
it doesn't really make any sense talking about that kind of thing in the year 2015, that's for sure.
No,
okay, just getting back to the music that you have for this album. I mean, let's take a song like Her Mercy or whatever. Do you think, if I thought that was something slightly new for somebody like Glenn Hansard, that sometimes you're at your very best when you are trying something new as opposed to doing something that you know you can do well?
Well, that's it. At the end of the day, if you want to wear the hat artist, whatever that word actually means, the word artist means that you're going and digging in a bit deeper than you have before, and that you're taking risks and that you're a bit vulnerable in your work. I mean, I guess in a way, you know, for me, tackling a song like Her Mercy, I mean, I was reading the Leonard Cohen book. I was reading the Sylvie Simmons book, I'm Your Man, on Leonard. And he spoke about mercy so much in such a beautiful way. And I found myself writing a lot when I was reading that book. And writing a lot of poetry and writing a lot of lyrics. But one of the words that kept coming up was mercy. Because Leonard speaks about the word so well and gives it, you know, almost like we give the 40 shades of green. He gives 40 shades of mercy. And it's a fascinating word. And so I tried to, in tribute to him, I tried to write a song. I remember getting off the plane, I landed in New Zealand, getting off the plane and going into the hotel lobby and kind of grabbing the guitar and getting it out and trying to write this tribute to him. It ended up sounding probably more like a tribute to Van the Man. But actually, the lyric was really for Leonard.
Okay, well, listen, hold on. You just said two things there. The first one is just about the actual song itself. I mean, Her Mercy, would that be a kind of song that you've had in your live set for some time? And does it become a different thing then when you finally put it out on the album? Like some of those songs, like real Glenn Hansard fans would know them quite well. Do you hone it to the way it is now, that it's very different than it might have been if we heard it 2 years ago or a year ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago it would have been much more kind of like the Caledonia soul band. It would have been much more me forcing the square peg into the round hole and trying to make it work in that sense. Whereas actually, I've gone back more towards the intimacy of what the original lyric was trying to be, which is just to sing it without any character. What I've been trying to get away from on this record, and funny thing is that the record ends up sounding quite traditional in its chord structures and all the rest. But what I've been trying to get away from is modeling, is caricature, is posture. I've been trying to get away from posture in my songwriting, because it's so easy as a songwriter, as a musician, to just kind of, well, let's play a riff that sounds a little bit like a Nashville riff, or let's play a riff that sounds a bit soulful or a bit Van or a bit different, you know. And these are all amazing references, but the point is that when you simply rely on posture, then you lose any individuality. So you have to try find posture and then back off from it and then find, okay, well, so I don't actually mean that. And really what it comes down to, Dave, is do I mean this? Do I believe this fella?
Well, hold on a second. Before you go any further, there's nothing wrong with playing any of the music that people play in terms of just getting the feel and putting it out there live or on album. But I would get the impression that with this new album from you, Didn't You Ramble is what it's called, that you have lived these lyrics and you don't just sing them.
Well, thank you. Well, yes. I mean, I'd like to say that, but I'm not, I'm not in a position to talk about it that way. But yes, that's exactly it. You live it and you sing it, and you basically, as Joni Mitchell puts it, you rhyme your life.
You rhyme your life indeed. Okay, well listen, by the way, you mentioned two people earlier on, and is it fair to say that when you were growing up in Dublin, they were the people that were in the house, even though you didn't necessarily know how they got in there, because it was your parents' music or whatever. You mentioned Leonard Cohen and you mentioned Van Morrison, and if I threw Bob Dylan in there to put at the top of that triangle, that's really what it was all about in the Glen Hansard house home, wasn't it?
It really was. You know, I grew up in Ballymun, and a lot of the lads who were kind of getting into using drugs and stuff, they had the best taste in music. And so I was lucky in that my older brother and sister and all of their mates, they just really had, they turned me on to some amazing stuff. Other than that, it was Lou Kelly and Bob Marley, which is also a pretty amazing standard to have as a kid, but for these guys to bring in all this other music was just fantastic.
Okay, well, let's take a look at just some of the other things that have, like, you know, marked every time we hear something from Glen Hansard in the news. I mean, like, you were on the soundtrack of The Hunger Games. You played with Springsteen and Kilkenny singing Drive All Night. You played Raglan Road with Ed Sheeran in front of 80,000 at Croke Park. You've been ukulele touring with Eddie Vedder and doing the 20th anniversary of Pearl Jam. You win the Bleeding Oscar. Every so often, you read these, oh, look what Glen Hansard's doing now. Look who he's on stage with now. Like, are all those things like really great to do in terms of doing them on the night, or is there more to it? Does a door open the next day or the next week because of what you did with those things?
It kind of depends on how you live your life, you know. Like, for instance, the most recent sort of fun was Ed Sheeran. My niece had been asking me for ages, can you get me tickets to Ed Sheeran? Get me tickets to Ed Sheeran. I was like, I really don't know. I don't know anything about the guy. I don't really know how to do that for you. I'm sorry, you know, and kind of not wanting to go and ring your mates at MCD or Aiken. I just kind of like, I don't want to do that. And then I got a phone call one afternoon, the afternoon before the gig, and it was Ed, and he said, I'm over at Christy Moore's house, and I'm just thinking, Glenn, would you jump up at me tonight and do a song? I was like, what? How are you?
you know what that means, Glenn. He was in. He was out there with Christy Moore, and Christy said no. He said, "Oh, I'll have to go.
Exactly.
I'll have to go for Plan B." What's your man's name, Hansard? What's his first name? Glenn.
I think Damien Rice would have been his first choice, but I don't know. Maybe he didn't have Damien's number.
All right. Okay. Fair enough.
That's just brilliant. You know, these things are just brilliant, and they're not political. You know, some of the best advice I ever got off a friend of mine when I was a kid was just like, you know, and it didn't make any sense to me until probably much, much, much later. It was just, Dublin's your home. Don't turn it into a place for your career. Just it's not a political place. It's your home. Whatever you do, enjoy it. And so in a way, that sounds kind of pompous in a way, but actually, it's true that if you're having a career, so go off and do your work. Go out and do your work in the world and work hard. But when you come home, and that happens here, just don't turn it into any kind of thing.
Well, that's fair enough. By the way, we are here talking to Glen Hansard. It's exactly 25 past 10. 51552 is our text. This interview is much too nice, so if anybody has a really mean question for Glen, send it into 51552. Glen, I want to just of all the people I mentioned there, I suppose I had to mention Springsteen first. To play with Springsteen and Kilkenny and Drive All Night, etc., that I presume is some kind of box ticked in some way, as in, like, to you, that's he means so much to you.
Well, you know, first of all, to play the gig with him at all was amazing, and he was incredibly grateful after we won the Oscar. I remember going to see him play at the RDS, and there was word got back out to us that Bruce wanted to say hello, and I remember being blown away. And I went back and we talked, and he talked about, you know, the award, and then we ended up spending the whole evening together and talking about, you know, basically, to put it really simply, I was going through a bit of a weird moment where I couldn't figure out, after all of the success, after all the success that we had just had, I couldn't figure out why I felt so kind of weird and kind of slightly miserable. I couldn't figure out, when everything is this good, why am I just kind of not feeling right? And he was like, oh man, he says, well, this one, he says, you know, he basically said, you've been wearing a suit for the last 20 years, and that suit is, you're the guy, it's you against the world, you're trying to get your song heard, you're trying to get your band out there, you're trying to get, you know, you're trying to get onto the map, you're trying to basically stand among the rest of them. You're not trying to be above them, or you're just trying to do your thing. And then he says, and then suddenly the world kind of goes, yeah, okay, what's your name? Yeah, okay, brilliant. So he counts this guy among everybody else, and then suddenly you go through this thing where you're no longer the guy who struggles, is you're trying on a new suit. And so in a way, the guy that you've been for the last 20 years is just deceased. And so you're going through a natural mourning phase. You're also going through a real celebration, but don't discount the fact that you've just had a success, you've just had a major shift in your life, and that's stormy weather. So you're actually going through a little bit of a mourning phase for your old self. Don't worry about it. Just go with it.
Well, then, with this new album, just as a logical conclusion to all that and Bruce Springsteen's advice, would it be fair to say that the youthful thirst to prove yourself is gone, and that the new, if you like, Glenn Hansard or whatever, is a pretty cool place to be?
Well, I'd like to think that you're trying to prove yourself to yourself. But yes, absolutely, David. There's definitely a lot of it. You know, because when you're trying to get your song heard, and it puts you in a terrible place when you're, you know, ambition is a terrible, it's a wonderful thing because it drives you forward, but it's also, it can be quite poisonous, and you can start thinking that there's some kind of, you know, agenda against your band or against your this or that, and there actually isn't. All that shit's inside you, you know.
All that's inside you, indeed. Just as a matter of interest, one of the people I mentioned there was Eddie Vedder, not just playing. You actually toured with Eddie Vedder, didn't you, on his ukulele song and stuff and that, and then you played the Pearl Jam 20th anniversary and that. What was he doing on that tour? Like, I know he's got the album Ukulele Songs. Was it a ukulele night?
It was more or less a ukulele night. I mean, he would do a bunch of Pearl Jam songs, and he had an electric guitar there, and he had a few acoustic guitars, but it was him all night. It was just him doing his tunes. And that voice, you know, because that's really, you know, if you're a Pearl Jam fan, that's where you lean back into, is that for him and Stone Gossard, that sound they make, you know?
Yeah. Do you know, one thing I didn't mention in terms of everything here is, like, the ultimate for many people, The Simpsons. Glenn.
This is your life.
yeah, seriously, though, it is. And here it is, Bart Simpson. In the name of the grandfather.
Yeah.
So did you have to, like, what did you have to, how do you do that? What happens?
I didn't do anything, Dave. We were in Tucson, Arizona. We were playing the Rialto in a beautiful old venue in Tucson, and we got a phone call, and it was from Matt Groening's people saying that The Simpsons would like to take the piss out of you. Do you think you could get to LA tomorrow and do a voiceover? And we just happened to be over that side of the world. And anyway, if we'd been in Ireland, we would have been on that side of the world the next morning anyway. So we jumped on the flight, we went off, we met the cast, who looked nothing like the characters, of course, and we sat around the table and we all read the script and we practiced it and then went into a recording studio, recorded it. It took an afternoon. It was just like this very simple thing, like, stop sending me pianos, you know, whatever it was. And, you know, and then 6 months later, there it was on St. I think it was, they put it out on St. Patrick's Day. And I think it was the same one they had Colin Farrell locked up in prison on the same episode.
Oh, right.
It's a wonderful thing. They wanted to sort of have fun. And we were like, really, this film? Because this film was pretty small. And they were like, well, we do it all the time. We take the piss out of things all the time, and because they're not popular, people don't notice, but we don't care.
Just about an interesting, you know, I'm just speaking of films, just finally, Hunger Games. I mean, that would, like, introduce Glenn Hansard or The Frames or any of that kind of Irish music of any level, or rock music even, whatever, like, to a completely different audience. Did it?
I guess so. I mean, I met T-Bone Burnett while I was doing a couple of things that were in Los Angeles. And T-Bone was, of course, a famous record producer. He's done a whole bunch of different things. But soundtracks, you know, the Coen brothers, you know, the Big Lebowski. Like, these were all the reasons we knew him so well. And he came on board and asked me to write some songs for this book. And I didn't know anything about The Hunger Games. He gave me the book. The book was called The Hunger Games. The film hadn't been made yet. And he said, would you write me a couple of songs, or write me a few songs based on this book? You know, and then just kind of submit them to me. There's a bunch of people doing it. If I like what you're doing, we can think about doing it. So I wrote maybe five or six ideas, and there was two full songs, I guess, in there. One was an old Frames demo idea that I had, and I changed the lyrics around. And then another one was a brand new song called Come Away to the Water. Mm. And T-Bone got on to me and said, yeah, I like this one, the Come Away to the Water one. I like this one. I like that rock one. And he says, but here's the thing. Maroon 5 are going to record the Come Away to the Water. So Adam Levine ended up singing that song. And for me as a songwriter, you have to be able to let go of that shit. And
oh, yeah.
You know, that's just brilliant. You know, that means, you know, it's like, on the one hand, your song's going to get heard, you know. And the fact that Maroon 5, I don't really know their music, but I know that they're huge.
Yeah.
And so he went off and did it. And actually ended up going to the studio with him, because Adam doesn't play the ukulele. So I ended up going. And the irony was, I ended up getting on really well with him and really enjoying his company, you know.
All right, well, look, I'll tell you, I'm going to let you go, Glenn, and thanks for your talk. But just before I do, one last thing.
Was it something I said?
Shut up. One last thing I want to mention is the frames again. I mean, like, you have done your frame stuff this year in terms of celebrating the 25 years. There is the longitude thing out, which is called an introduction to the frames as well. The frames still alive and well and living in?
The frames are still alive and well, and we're all mates, and we're all getting on. And really, like, what it comes down to for us is that unless we make some new music, we're not making any music. And so the frames, the 25th anniversary was really important, but I think for us, I don't think any of us are inclined to sort of do anything until we make another record. And so we just don't know when that's going to be.
All right. Well, look, I'm going to play a track from the album now. The album's out at the moment. It's called Didn't He Ramble. It's from Glenn Hansard. We can call it the second solo album. The track I'm going to play, actually, is called Winning Streak. And on that track, you have Sam Beam from, what do you call it, Iron and Wine, yeah?
Yeah, Sam. And Sam Amidon also joins us on that one. We were just in the studio and Sam was in New York and, you know, from traveling the States up and down and traveling Europe up and down, you come across a lot of, you know, all the other people out there that are working hard, you sort of come across them and you end up hanging out. Yeah. And so Sam has become a friend through the years.
Okay, just on that, wasn't there some connection with this to what you would do in upstate New York in terms of the Big Pink or wherever the hell it was, in terms of Levon Helm?
Well, absolutely. And Levon really embodied that thing of God, what I always assumed was a Dylan inspired thing, which was the basement. That basement tape's not a notion that you get a bunch of heads into a room and you sit up all night and you play music. And so we'd been hearing about this thing called the Midnight Ramble for years, and it was Levon's. It was basically Levon owns a barn in Woodstock, and bands would kind of come up and they would end up sort of playing all night. And we were invited up there at the height of everything with the Swell Season, when everything was in that kind of crazy mode. It was one of the best things we could possibly have done. And then I ended up going up and spending a bit of time with Levon later on, and just basically I remember recording a couple of new songs. So somewhere there's a couple of new songs that I've recorded where Levon is playing drums, and I'm trying to get the recordings out, and I can understand if they don't want to hand them over to me right now, but geez, I'd love to hear them.
Okay, listen, I'm going to play the track. Didn't He Ramble is the album. Winning Streak is the song. And just one thing about the Leonard Cohen and the Van Morrison and the Bob Dylan I mentioned earlier on, what a fantastic trip it's been for you up to the age of 45. If you could go to the age that those three are, doing the same kind of thing, just playing your music and getting it out there, would that be a life brilliantly led, would it, Glenn?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, I don't think that's ever the intention for them, but in a lot of ways, it's really beginning to show, isn't it? The wheat from the chaff, if you like. You know, you look at these guys, you look at Bruce, he's 66 the other day. You know, Dylan's in his 80s, I think.
He's about 74, I'd say.
Leonard's in his 80s for sure. But
yeah,
God, these guys are still doing it. And you know what? I'm still putting out great work. That's the thing.
Yeah. Well, listen, long may it continue. Thanks for talking to us, Glenn. Good luck with the album. Take it easy.